This file is a recording of a presentation entitled, Why is Photographing an Execution a Crime? Once and Future Issues Raised by the Suit to Webcast McVeigh's Execution. It's given by Dr. Paul Layton, a criminologist at Eastern Michigan University. This is an expanded version of a presentation originally given before the 2007 Academy of Criminal Justice Sciences meeting in Seattle, Washington. As a quick introduction, I've been interested in the issue of televising executions since I was a graduate student, working on an early edition of Robert Johnson's book Death Work, A Study of the Modern Execution Process. At the same time, I came across a book by Neil Postman called Amusing Ourselves to Death, Public Discourse in an Age of Show Business, and obviously became curious about the intersection of these two ideas. I found that people who favored a televised execution included supporters of the death penalty as well as opponents. Death penalty supporters see televised executions as part of a tough-on-crime campaign. Many realize that the death penalty doesn't deter now, but argue that that's because it's done in secret, and that a televised execution would bring home the reality of the punishment and achieve deterrence. Death penalty opponents believe that televising an execution would undercut support for the death penalty because executions are not hallmarks of a civilized society. They continue because they are done in secret, and that exposing them would bring home the reality of this punishment and how inconsistent it is with our modern values. Those who are opposed to televised executions are also on both sides of the death penalty debate. Their fear is that people would become desensitized to violence, that they would become coarsened or maybe even brutalized. Others feel that a televised execution would be inappropriate or even tasteless. An earlier article I did outlined these arguments, the assumptions behind them, and critiqued them as well. The article is called Fear and Loathing in an Age of Show Business, and it's available at my website, along with a lot of other resources on televised executions. Look for paulsjusticepage.com, the Criminal Justice Ethics section, or you can also just Google the phrase televised executions and look for Paul's Justice Page. Thanks for checking this out, and now for the presentation. A story has been told before about a sailor washed up on an uncharted island. He's originally apprehensive about its inhabitants, but comes across a gallows and he's relieved. At last, I've reached civilization. The story works as a joke because the link between executions and civilization contains both truth and tension. The gallows is an apparatus, it's a technology, whose purpose is premeditated killing, but that is inconsistent with the notion of being a civilized society. The same tension plays out in the South Park movie, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut, where the U.S. is executing two Canadians on television, and a character announces, "This is a great day for democracy." Here, the idea of civilization has the added qualities of being a democracy, whose values of openness are achieved by telecommunications technology, but that's incongruously being used to show an execution. The real-life situation in Iraq isn't humorous, but the execution of dictator Saddam Hussein reveals some of these same tensions. Hussein's hanging was heralded by President Bush as an important milestone in Iraq's course to becoming a democracy. Yet television executives said that using the footage of this democratic milestone would be inappropriate, even tasteless. Consider that next time you're watching TV and you think that something is inappropriate and tasteless. The richest example of this is McVeigh's execution for bombing the federal building in Oklahoma City, and that's really the subject of this presentation. McVeigh waived his privacy rights and endorsed making his execution more publicly available because he favored scrutiny of government actions. The gleefully pro-death penalty President Bush declined the chance to show the public how the government gets toughs on terrorism. They allowed it to be televised to an auditorium in Oklahoma City, but prevented it from becoming available on the internet by defending a federal law that criminalizes making a photographic recording of an execution. So presumably here, no one recorded the closed-circuit broadcast back to Oklahoma City, and the law wouldn't be violated if it was shown, but there was no photographic recording of it. The situation raises two central questions that I'm going to try to deal with in this presentation. First of all, why is it that a photographer at an execution is a criminal? Why is it a crime to make a videotape of a mass murderer being put to sleep? Second, would the televised execution of a terrorist be a great day for democracy? Why is it that the terrorist who blew up a daycare center in the Oklahoma City Federal Building is the one who's in favor of public scrutiny of government actions, and the government that's putting him to sleep seems to shy away from public accountability? I'm going to try to address these questions by first of all looking at the background of private execution statutes and some of the case law involving televised executions. Second, I'll talk about McVeigh's crime and why I'm a little bit surprised that President Bush didn't televise the execution, given the president's long advocacy of the death penalty. Finally, I'll review the legal case of Entertainment Network versus Lappin, where all of this played out in the court, and their decision about why a photographer at an execution is a crime. Throughout much of European history, executions were done in public squares. There was pageantry and spectacle that was done before audiences of thousands. The tradition of public executions came over to the United States and persisted well into the 20th century. Extra legal executions like lynchings attracted crowds and families, even as states curtailed legal executions done by such things as portable electric chairs that could be set up so the local community could watch offenders be punished. States started the slow process of restricting public access to execution in the 1830s through private execution statutes, and courts accepted paternalistic justifications about the need for secrecy. One court, for example, said that secrecy was necessary to avoid exciting an unwholesome effect on the public mind. For that reason, it must take place before dawn, while the masses are at rest, and within an enclosure, so as to debar the morbidly curious. But even when denied direct access to execution, people in places like Mississippi during the 1940s gathered late at night on the courthouse square with chairs, crackers, and children waiting for the current to be turned on and the streetlights to dim. The lawsuits over televising executions arose after 1976, when the Supreme Court lifted its moratorium on executions, and the issue became more widely debated. The first case I'm going to talk about is the 1977 case of Garrett versus Estelle, which took place when a station wanted to broadcast the first execution in Texas since 1964. The official witnesses to an execution include media representatives, but the prison media policies prohibited cameras. So the issue here isn't exactly a First Amendment issue of free press, but it's one of equal protection based on reporting tools. If a print reporter with a notebook is allowed, then photojournalists with a camera should also be allowed. Interestingly, Texas was willing to set up a closed-circuit broadcast of the execution to accommodate reporters beyond the two official media representatives, but they defended their prohibition on all forms of recording, and that wasn't just videotaping, but also audio recording. The lower court in this case struck down the Texas law and ordered officials to allow the taping. They said, quote, "If government officials can prevent the public from witnessing films of governmental proceedings solely because the government decides that it's not fit for public viewing, then news cameras might be barred from other public facilities where public officials are engaged in illegal, immoral, or other improper activities that might be offensive, shocking, distasteful, or otherwise disturbing to viewers of television news." The Court of Appeals disagreed and reversed the ruling and barred the cameras. They argued that the press has no greater right of access to information than does the public at large. And they ultimately said, quote, "In order to sustain Garrett's argument, we would have to find that the moving picture of the actual execution possessed some quality, giving it content beyond, for example, that possessed by a simulation of the execution. Despite the unavailability of film of the actual execution, the public can be fully informed. The free flow of ideas and information need not be inhibited," unquote. KQED versus Vasquez was a 1992 case that arose when a public television station sued to tape the execution of Robert Alton Harris, California's first execution since 1967. The television station based its claim on a series of Supreme Court rulings that allowed cameras into the courtroom. The state argued that prohibitions were grounded in various concerns about security, especially when the case had already inflamed public opinion. Inmates might riot if they saw the execution, guards may be identified and be placed in jeopardy, and bulky camera equipment could break the glass on the gas chamber, causing the release of poisonous gas. Ultimately, the judge decided against KQED, but in an ironic twist, the execution was videotaped by the state of California because of an order by a federal district court judge so that it could be used in a case involving the constitutionality of the gas chamber. Ultimately, this tape was never used. It was prepared in expectation of rebuttal, the testimony that when condemned men breathed in the poisonous gas, they went into spasms and twitches that reflected pain. Those challenging the gas chamber were expecting the state of California to rebut this testimony, and they would have the videotape ready for use. Instead, California didn't challenge the statements that men did twitch and spasm, but what they did is they called toxicologists to challenge the value of the lay witnesses. The toxicologists said, "We have the training, and this is the result of unconscious reflexes and not conscious pain." The tape was no longer relevant to the legal case, so the judge ordered the tape destroyed, even though it had obvious interests of historical value. In 1994, there was also the case of Lawson versus Dixon, which involved a death row inmate suing the prison to allow then talk show host Phil Donahue to tape his execution. The footage was to air in a documentary about Dixon's life, and Dixon said he hoped that this documentary could, quote, "serve as an example to others of the effects of child abuse, anxiety disorder, depression, and the pitfalls of a life of crime, and that it be used as an educational medium to aid in the prevention of, and hopefully as a deterrent to others who might fall into the same lifestyle and patterns of conduct which I followed. I also feel and am equally committed to do all within my power to inform the public of the true significance of the death penalty and thereby to make a meaningful contribution to the significant public debate over the use of the death penalty." The courts ultimately found that Dixon did not have a right to have Donahue as a witness present with the camera, and that Donahue separately could attend as a witness, but didn't have the right to attend with the camera. Nothing prevented Donahue from talking about what he witnessed, and access to the event with the camera was not part of the First Amendment right, or at least it was one outweighed by security concerns. The conclusion of this is that the First Amendment hasn't done very well in these cases. The courts have been unsympathetic to the concern about reporting tools and the discrimination against visual media. They've tended to give wide deference to prison administrators who cite security concerns. Making sense of McVeigh's legal case involving the webcast execution makes more sense with a little bit of background on McVeigh and the bombing of the Oklahoma City building. Timothy McVeigh bombed the federal building in Oklahoma City, which was the deadliest terrorist attack in United States history up until that time. It killed 168, including children in the daycare center that was directly above the blast. McVeigh's motivations were rooted in an anti-government ideology, fueled by the government killings of the Weavers at Ruby Ridge and 76 Branch Davidians, including children, at Waco, Texas. In a letter from Death Row, McVeigh explained that the bombing was a retaliatory strike, a counterattack against a government that's increasingly militaristic and violent to the point where at Waco, our government, like the Chinese, was deploying tanks against its own citizens. McVeigh is described as having a high IQ and a relatively normal childhood. He played war with the children that he babysat, he especially liked Star Wars, and chances to play out the battle of good and evil, in which McVeigh always took the side of the good guys. He enlisted in the Army in 1998, where he excelled at basic training. During this time, McVeigh first read the Turner Diaries, which is a fictional racist account of Earl Turner's resistance to the Zionist-occupied government that overtakes the U.S. and disarms its white citizens. McVeigh didn't share the book's racism, but he identified with the diary's obsession with guns and explosives and a final all-out battle against the system. During Operation Desert Storm, McVeigh killed for the first time, although he took no pride in killing Iraqi citizens who had been coerced into fighting. The military decorated him with the Bronze Star for valor, among other commendations. And after the Persian Gulf War, he washed out of Special Forces training, which seems to be a major turning point in his life that filled him with bitterness and opened up a period of time where he was a drifter. When the police arrested McVeigh after the bombing, he was wearing a t-shirt with a quote attributed to Thomas Jefferson: "The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants." His trial would be shown via closed-circuit TV to an overflow crowd of survivors and bombing victims' relatives. McVeigh believed that the media would edit his comments before sentencing to make him look bad, so he uttered only four sentences, including a quote from Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis: "Our government is the potent, the omnipresent teacher. For good or ill, it teaches the whole people by its example." This was from a case called Olmstead versus the United States, which involved government wiretaps, and Brandeis was in dissent because he finds that the government has gone too far. Brandeis wrote about the importance of the right of personal security, liberty, and property, and he penned his classic phrase about how the Bill of Rights confers the right to be let alone. The Bureau of Prisons made arrangements to show McVeigh's lethal injection via closed-circuit TV to victims back in Oklahoma. McVeigh requested that his execution be broadcast more publicly, and the Internet Entertainment Group sued to allow access to the feed. Their plan was to take what was going to Oklahoma City, splice into it, and make it available on the web, but in a way that obviously the cameras would be controlled by the Bureau of Prisons officials in the execution chamber, which should cut down on concerns about security and privacy. In some ways, it's surprising that the pro-execution Bush administration decided to defend the law that prevented them from broadcasting an execution. As governor of Texas, Bush provided over the execution of 152 inmates, more than any other governor. Bush seems to have had no moral qualms about the executions and gave little thought to mercy in spite of the compassionate conservative label he publicly embraced. He's only commuted one death sentence, which happened during the presidential election, and that was in a case where there was evidence that the convicted murderer was actually out of town on the day of the crime. When a journalist asked then-State Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez directly whether Bush ever read clemency petitions, Gonzalez replied that Bush did so from time to time. Bush's run for presidency ended up raising many questions about executions since his time as governor in Texas included the execution of juvenile offenders, the mentally retarded, foreign nationals not informed of their rights under international treaties, defendants with sleeping attorneys, and others with serious doubts about their guilt. What better way to silence critics, though, than by showing McVeigh's execution? Here's a terrorist, a mass murderer who blew up a daycare center, and he's being put to sleep by lethal injection. The lethal injection protocols even include swabbing the arm with alcohol so as not to get an infection. Certainly this would appear to the world as very civilized. Here's an execution with no questions of guilt, no problematic race issues, no sleeping attorneys, and, in short, McVeigh's execution is as legitimate as they get in the U.S. The execution was already being filmed by the Bureau of Prisons for the people in Oklahoma City, and the lawsuit could provide political cover to turn the upstart new media internet companies into a vehicle for state-created, state-controlled, state-supplied footage of a controversial social issue. One can even imagine a speech invoking the sanctity of victims' rights to argue that the nation victimized by domestic terrorism should be able to take part in watching the perpetrator be executed. So we have on one side McVeigh, who sees himself as part Luke Skywalker and part Thomas Jefferson, a patriot fighting a dark and corrupt government. On the other side is Bush, the fortunate son party boy who claims to have found his way and is now one of the righteous. He's patriotic and takes a backseat to no one in standing up for the American way of life, especially against criminals and terrorists. But despite the confident swagger, it's Bush who blinks and feels uncomfortable with the broader public scrutiny of his actions. As Bush walks away from McVeigh's challenge, Warden Lappin becomes responsible for arguing the reasonableness of the federal law prohibiting the photographic recording of an execution. The affidavit submitted by the warden is the longest contemporary legal argument for not televising executions. Judge Tinder summarizes it in his opinion, and I'll read part of that, focusing on the main issues. Drawing from his experience in corrections, Warden Lappin makes the following points. First, that to maintain security and good order in a prison setting, it's important that inmates understand and believe that they'll be treated like human beings and not dehumanized. Second, that the government's interest in not sensationalizing and preserving the solemnity of executions is based upon the danger that if prison inmates were to see the execution on television or receive word of the televised event through other means, the inmates may well see the execution as sport, which dehumanizes them. Third, that when inmates feel that they're dehumanized or devalued as persons, agitation amongst the inmates is frequently fomented, which in turn can lead to prison disturbances. Essentially, the argument is that there's something about the release of the program to the wider audience beyond Oklahoma City that radically transforms executions, even when the cameras are controlled by the Bureau of Prisons. Basically, the opportunity to make a government propaganda video about the lethal injection of a terrorist will still result in the perception of executions as dehumanized sport. The court's decision in favor of the Bureau of Prisons and Bush administration found that it was appropriate, indeed virtually imperative, to defer to the Bureau of Prisons in the area of security concerns. According to Judge Tinder's opinion, Warden Lappin's explanations depict an environment which has been characterized as one of unremitting tension between guards and inmates who are forced to coexist in a closed, tightly controlled environment peopled by those who have chosen to violate the criminal law. Thus, it is difficult to gainsay the judgment of prison administrators. The judge concludes in very sweeping terms that, quote, the setting in which this case arises and which in any foreseeable challenge to the law would arise, controls the outcome. In other words, so long as executions happen in prison, the regulation on prohibiting executions makes sense. The law is, to quote the judge, reasonably related to legitimate penological interests, so no other conclusion is warranted, nor indeed would another conclusion be possible in the circumstances here. This paper started by asking the question, why is a photographer at an execution a criminal? The answer in Entertainment Network versus Lappin is that televising McVeigh's lethal injection beyond Oklahoma City might cause 20 inmates on the maximum security federal death row to riot because televising the execution of a terrorist will make the death penalty seem like dehumanized sport. More generally, the United States can't show an execution, even of a mass murderer, because it will make the inmates feel bad about executions. State control of the camera doesn't matter, and apparently there's no readily available alternative in the way of death row reforms that can be tried instead of banning the photographer. Even if it's true that televising executions will lead to disturbances in prison, the court should have done a better job distinguishing whether it was the act of televising the execution that causes problems, or if problems result from television showing a process that involves dehumanized sport, such as the planned killing of a helpless individual by a group. A policy banning cameras is better supported if the bad effects result from televising a solemn spectacle, but that shouldn't be assumed. Prohibiting cameras because they show an ugly reality is an affront to democratic notions of open government. The government shouldn't be able to decide which of its activities are acceptable for public viewing. By not examining this question, the court overlooks the possibility that television coverage, even when the cameras controlled by the state, would show the death penalty for the dehumanized sport it is. Rather than dealing with that potential truth, the court seeks to avoid prison disturbances by suppressing images that could lead to accurate but negative evaluations of government actions. Further, men living under sentence of death develop some intense feelings about the justice of executions, and it's difficult to see how a televised execution would make them more cynical. Indeed, if the death penalty is seen as sport, it might have something to do with George Bush mocking Carla Faye Tucker after the Pope asked for clemency, the calls for executing juveniles and mentally ill people, tailgate parties to celebrate others being fried, continued errors in imposing death sentences, an egregiously poor system for providing effective defense counsel that the U.S. refuses to remedy, and a long history of racial and class discrimination. Part of what makes the death penalty seem like dehumanized sport is how people trained to think like a lawyer follow politically infused rules to bizarre and sometimes disastrous conclusions. The judge takes no notice of the larger political environment of tough-on-crime, where the execution card is played more frequently and probably more cynically than the race card. The actions of Bush and Gonzalez, both in Texas and in the federal government, reflect and substantially contribute to the political environment where the death penalty can legitimately be seen as dehumanized political support. But they now become defenders of all that's solemn and dignified about executions. Executing people with sleeping lawyers, those who are retarded, crazy, young, born again, potentially innocent, all that's fine even if you don't bother to read the clemency petitions. But televising an execution, that's going too far. Apparently, the problem isn't with the death penalty. It's the photographer at the execution that's the problem. And it's their duty to defend the law, making it a crime to photograph an execution. That's not a great day for democracy.